The Spectator magazine is home to wonderful writing, insightful analysis, and unrivaled books and arts reviews. Subscribe today for just £12 and receive a 12-week subscription in print and online, along with a free £20 John Lewis or Waitrose voucher. Go to spectator.co.uk/voucher.
Hello and welcome to the Americano podcast, a series of discussions about American politics, power and prejudices. This year, 2024, is an election year in America, a presidential election year. And so we will be doing two podcasts a week rather than our usual one, because we want to and because we know you can't get enough Americano in your life. Today we're going to be talking about the state of Pennsylvania, which looks increasingly certain to play a very, very important part in this year's presidential election. In fact, Donald Trump recently said that if we win Pennsylvania, we win the whole thing. To talk about this, I'm delighted to be joined by Oliver Bateman, who is a writer for Unheard, and a Pennsylvania resident. He joins us now from Pittsburgh. Oliver, you've written about this subject. Just for our viewers who don't understand quite why Pennsylvania will be so crucial, can you explain why it will be?
Well, Pennsylvania is a large state that is at the moment probably the most divided and I suppose by that same token, most representative of the American states. It is a state that was very much a toss-up, right? So Trump won it in 2016 powered by a lot of mail-in ballots in 2020. Joe Biden was able to win the state, you know, sort of a last second push there that night. And now, even with the sort of like Kamala bounce, right, you know, this kind of polling bump that the Democrats got for switching out the candidate, it remains a place where, you know, Kamala Harris, the Democratic VP, was here yesterday at our Economic Council in Pittsburgh talking about her still admittedly somewhat vague plan for economic revitalization and rejuvenation here. Like, this is a state that, based on the kind of divided calculus of the American electoral system, where you get a set number of votes for winning each state, Pennsylvania is the one that has enough votes, and the other states seem to be leaning ways where if Pennsylvania falls a certain way, and any other number of things could happen, but the most likely outcome is that Pennsylvania is a state that flips the election. It used to be our neighbor Ohio that was said to the West that was said to change things. You know, as Ohio goes, so goes the nation. But at the moment, it seems to be Pennsylvania. We have a Democratic governor. We have a Republican legislature. So we have divided government in the state. We have deeply divided government in the rural areas, which are mostly red, and the urban areas, which are largely blue. And again, this is sort of America in microcosm at the moment. You know, we have places of economic growth, which are mainly driven by like tech and nonprofit and these kind of services. And we mostly have a lot of deindustrialization and decline. You know, I live in a county with a declining, you know, more deaths than births. And then a city that has seen just a staggering losing half its population in the last 70 years.
And frustratingly, the polls are not giving us a very clear indication of where Pennsylvania is going to go at the moment. With Biden, it seemed he was falling behind, as he was in other places, was falling behind Trump. But Harris certainly seems to have made it very, very tight indeed. And I don't know, what's your reading of the polls? It seems to me extremely close.
So I was reading on the Hill this morning, like a poll came out from Monmouth University. And again, it's got the state 50-48 for Harris, but that's, you know, margin of error within the polling. I mean, since she's taken over, they've made a big deal out of these bounces in various states, but these bounces just amount to toss-ups everywhere, all over the place. So you look at this and you see a toss-up and you don't know what's going to affect the race in October. As we approach the polls in early November, that's going to sway everything. It's really fascinating. And again, I think that the fact that both candidates, like Trump announced the other day that he's going to come back to the site of the Butler rally, which is just 30 minutes north of Pittsburgh. to speak again in the same spot, you know, where he was shot, which is, you know, kind of symbolic. But I mean, like I said, Kamala was here yesterday giving a big economic speech. And this, they're just going to be on the ground here a ton. I mean, if you were a TV viewer here, you would be, and it's not just this, it's that there's a big Senate race going on here between the near billionaire David McCormick Republican and the incumbent Democrat Bob Casey. These ads are wall to wall. You could be watching, you know, sports, and you'll see a Harris ad, then you'll see a Trump ad, then you'll see a McCormick ad, then you'll see a Casey ad, and they'll just blast you, you know, each one saying the other's a liar. And, yeah, and you know, you'll get, I get calls, I get texts, I get all of these things. Like, we are being heavily, heavily, you know, campaigned in.
It's possible, isn't it, that more money is being spent in Pennsylvania this year than in any state in any election in history?
I mean, it's possible that more money is being spent here, certainly, than in a major, large European country's election in one U.S. state.
Yeah.
Which is remarkable.
You mentioned the shooting, and obviously that took place in Butler, Pennsylvania. And for a lot of people, not so long ago, you know, how long it was, 10 weeks ago, it seemed like such a pivotal moment, and Trump seemed so sort of courageous, and there was that photograph, and it seemed to be this defining moment. Obviously, that has, as a lot of Republican cynics say, been shoved into the memory hole to a certain extent. But I wonder, you're speaking as a Pennsylvanian, how important is it to Pennsylvanians that it happened in Pennsylvania? How much do you think that will impact Trump's appeal in the state?
I don't think that it's going to ultimately, and I have a lot of red leaning relatives and some who even predicted like a red wave after that event. You know, they immediately took to their social media, which for non-media people is usually Facebook and things like that, and predicting these red waves and posting these red maps. But even they, I think, see that that influence has waned. But what I think is going to be determinative is the sense, and I've written about this for Real Clear Pennsylvania, the sense that there's an economic malaise, particularly in this country, particularly in this region, that goes beyond the official numbers that we're getting, you know? And I think that that is keeping this race closer than people would expect. You know, you'd expect it to be based on all of the, like, a lot of the mainstream media really leans center left or left, but it's this sense that's keeping, and our other senator, John Fetterman, who won an election despite, you know, having a stroke and being nearly kind of immobilized in that time, really a remarkable thing. You know, he's now become more cogent and he's sort of pulling things back together, but he's been all over the map. But he talked about how campaigning in Pennsylvania, it struck him as a bad strategy. And it was, you know, he's breaking ranks with the party on a lot of things because he's going to be facing re-election soon, you know, in a couple years. And he's going to, it's going to be an even more purple state by that point. And he's saying, you know, we shouldn't have run in this kind of lawfare campaign against Trump. We shouldn't have painted him as a felon. We shouldn't have painted him as a criminal. We should have just run against his policies. You know, he's like, I dislike him as a person, but that's not how you're going to win races. And certainly in Pennsylvania, people are going to look and think, you know, does my dollar go as far as it used to? Do I have, you know, a job that is as good as I did a decade ago or, you know, 4 years ago when Trump was the president pre-COVID shutdowns? And much more importantly, and I have to stress this here in Pittsburgh, for example, right? We had razor close mid 2023 off-cycle local elections where this is a uniparty city. The elections here are typically uncompetitive, but we elected a Republican-aligned district attorney who had been a former Democrat. We almost, and there was a ton of Republican money put behind him, elected a Republican county executive, Joe Rocky, over the woman that did win, the young woman, Sarah Enamorato, who in the course of sort of rising in her political career here, had said the white working class was racist. It was a razor close race. And there was almost a turnover. And that's a position that's arguably more important than the mayor of the city of Pittsburgh. And this is now a city, to put it in real sharp perspective for your listeners. And I'm trying to let everybody know who wants to know, the city of Pittsburgh's public schools, the public school system for the city, had 60,000 people like 15 years ago. at the beginning of COVID had 40,000 students enrolled. This is a city of 300,000 right now, 40,000 students in 2020. 2 years of lockdowns, it has 19,000 students left. The kids have all been pulled into private schools or left, or the parents have departed. It is a city that is not even cultivating a generation of future leaders publicly. It is still paying thousands of teachers, but it is now shutting down 16 schools. That is a clear sign that, you know, this is not a healthy place. And when there's not a healthy place, the incumbent party is not going to have a great advantage.
And Pittsburgh, as you've written about, is particularly interesting because not so long ago, it was seen to be one of these deindustrialized cities that was regenerating itself.
Yes.
And I would like you to talk about that in comparison with, it's the second biggest city in Pennsylvania, I think, after Philadelphia. I mean, compare Pittsburgh and Philadelphia and how they're breaking along Democratic and Republican lines.
Philadelphia is going outside of the Philly suburbs, which will break Republican. Outside of the Philly suburbs, Philly is going to be a Democratic city. It's going to provide a lot of blue votes. Certainly in 2020, it provided the bulk of those mail-in votes. That region provided the bulk of the mail-in votes that put Biden over the top. Pittsburgh, on the other hand, its surrounding areas, which were rural and used to be like my home county, Washington County, you know, where people mine coal. My stepdad was a coal miner. My grandfather's a coal miner. All these folks was reliably blue for until like 2012, like reliably labor blue, has flipped. Is, you know, the cities are red. The cities are like MAGA red, like Trump supported people have pushed out, or Trump aligned people have pushed out longtime Republicans in those areas. You know, the same with Westmoreland County, which is another county, adjacent to Pittsburgh's Allegheny County. Those areas have already turned over. The north of here had turned red even before that. And the city of Pittsburgh is edging ever closer. I don't think it, you know, I don't know if it could happen, but it's edging ever closer to even potentially electing a Republican mayor, which hasn't happened in ages. So we are, you know, there is this shift in the air. There's still a lot of, you know, Democratic strength, particularly in the city. You know, there's a large minority population. There's traditional levers, even the more traditional trades unions, which are a little more conservative among the unions, have backed Harris with a few exceptions. So there's these support mechanisms there, but there is, and it's this malaise that I point to, you know, this idea that we had a renaissance here is great marketing. Right. You know, the steel mills closed by the mid 80s. Everything is closed down. You know, the wolf finally came after Pittsburgh has declined since 1920 almost. And people don't realize this. Like, we sort of peaked as a steel producer in the 20s and then it moves to other areas. The 50s, the economy is healthy here, but not as great as it was. By the 70s, by the 80s, the writing is on the wall for the region, and the deindustrialization hits here very, very hard, but there is a tremendous educational, like university base. There's a huge healthcare sector, and the area grows a nonprofit sector. And so jobs are kind of maintained in these areas. And so you can say, well, this is an eds and meds region, right? Now other places have branded themselves this way, but these jobs don't scale the same way. A lot of them can now be done remotely. You can outsource them. You can outsource them to India in some cases if you need to. And they don't provide opportunities often for those 19,000 kids left in the failing public school system here. Those kids are going to miss out, but carpetbaggers coming in from New York City or somewhere else will very easily be able to take these jobs. A lot of them may not have families or may not form families here, but they can buy expensive houses, drive up, because we still have a very cheap housing market, relatively speaking, drive up the cost of living and generally just, you know, really continue to skew the nature of this place. It's not really a revival. It's just kind of a, as my dad would say before he died, you know, Pittsburgh's not having a renaissance, not having a revival. It's having a last gasp, yeah. This is what you do before you're out of moves, right? You make moves till you're out of moves. And then this sort of eds and meds and all of these people starting little nonprofit hustles, you know, that are all trying to uplift. We've got so much uplift in this area, right? We ought to be on cloud nine as the guy on my shirt, Jim Trafficant, the congressman for nearby Youngstown, used to say. So, like everybody's uplifting, everybody's raising consciousnesses here. But how high can you get them without an actual industrial base?
Well, your talk about EDS and MEDS makes me think about the issue of abortion, because we understand that Wisconsin, possibly, if it votes for Harris, it will largely be because abortion is such a prominent issue there. And indeed, across the Rust Belt, while there seems to be an economic move towards Trump, or a move towards Trump because of economic issues, these are not socially conservative areas like the Deep South. And so abortion plays better for Harris in these states. That's a fair thing to say.
Oh, certainly. And there's a gender divide, right, in the Rust Belt states. So, you'll see, and you cross the whole country, but certainly in these states, you'll see, even within married couples, men breaking one way and, women breaking another. And the abortion issue, particularly the abortion issue as it's presented from the Vance perspective, the sort of J.D. Vance perspective. You know, he had to scrub his website. He had even said on a podcast that I hosted, right, back when, that he favored a national ban, to make it consistent. Trump has, of course, distanced himself from all that. He said that's not what he wanted. He's fine with a state by state standard. But again, that is not going to tip the election in favor of Trump. That is something that can actively, and has been, when I watch the commercials, the abortion issue is the one that's highlighted.
Yeah.
And the high-risk commercials, that's one of the ones that they hit. We're going to protect reproductive justice. Do you really want to send us to Switzerland every time we have to get an abortion or something like that? But this is, and I think it's a tough play for the Republicans. It's probably the toughest needle they've got to thread in winning the Rust Belt. And had the party itself coalesced around a 12-week or 16-week or some kind of standard that it could just say, this is it, nothing further. But just like the left, right, when you have movements that have galvanized you for so long, but they also want the whole enchilada, you're going to have problems.
You mentioned the Democratic governor, Josh Shapiro, at the beginning. When Kamala Harris picked Tim Walz instead of him, a lot of people said, she's sacrificing a nominee who could wrap up Pennsylvania. Do you think that is true? Do you think not picking Shapiro will affect the election?
I think she should have picked him, especially now with the passage of time. I think a lot of people, like Tim Walz, it was remarkable. This is the same thing that happened in 2016. Admittedly, different states and different approaches, but Tim Walz and Virginia Senator Tim Kaine, both of whom have gotten this weird kind of like gray daddy treatment, this Democratic, soft guys that are just kind of picked and brought in. I don't think either added much to their campaigns. I don't think either is particularly compelling. And that's usually why you pick a VP, right? It's not an important role. It's not an important position. John Nance Garner, one of Franklin Roosevelt's VPs, said, that the position is not worth a bucket of warm piss or something like that. Mm. So you can pick a non-entity to be in the role. You can pick someone older like Walz, although he's not as old as he looks, but you can pick an older person to be in that role, and they're non-threatening. But I think that Shapiro, younger, dynamic, as an attorney general, he certainly had a very strong record here in the state. He won a major wage theft case. He was clearly aligned with labor. He sounds almost exactly like Barack Obama on the stump, so much so that he's almost certainly memorized or been doing declamation exercises while listening to Barack Obama speeches. It's very, I think he actually would have tipped, and certainly in a state like Michigan, right, where there's a Jewish population and there's an Arab population, he'd be very clear on the issue of Israel to voters, a clear signal, right, if you're trying to win in those types of areas, just strategically. But I think also, though, he does present a challenge. He's a younger candidate. He's a younger person. He's a rising person. Maybe they have some other plans in mind for him in the administration. He's certainly campaigning for them. But I think as a PR move, it would have been the better play. Walz had some things that certainly were played up at the time that seemed to recommend him, but I don't see him as a figure that's like transformative or needle moving in any way. And I don't think that I think he might reassure or soothe the base, which is what, he was praised by Bernie Sanders. He was praised by other left-leaning figures, but he's not. To me, picking Shapiro saves you having to be in this state almost every day of the week till the election.
Well, I guess in my biased way, I was hoping you were going to tell me that real Pennsylvanians actually hate Shapiro, but
I don't think he's hated in the way that his success, you know, his predecessor, Tom Wolf, was becoming hated because Tom Wolf was tied to the COVID lockdowns. Tom Wolf was like an elite of elites, you know. I think that there was more animus by the end. I think Shapiro will, you know, if he lingers long, he's not been here that long as governor. So if he lingers longer, you will like the part aligned against him will hate him more.
Yeah.
That would have been another thing in his favor, right? He's still new enough in this role. And as attorney general, he had some successes. He had a track record, enough of one to make the jump. It probably would have been a wise move, but I mean, like, obviously Republicans in the state are, you know, going to hate whoever the Democratic governor is. But for the independent voters or people who I would consider sort of non-aligned, like my stepdad, they don't have the bad feelings about him that they did about Tom Wolf. Like Tom Wolf, especially because of the COVID stuff,
really
frosted a lot of those pumpkins. They didn't like that type of guy. But again, maybe Shapiro would have weaknesses on the trail too. I mean, the Israel stuff is a major weakness in some areas. Doesn't play well in some areas. I don't know how it would play in the South, for example.
Yeah, you know, maybe his Obama imitation, while it strikes me as completely absurd how much of a copy it is. It's pretty weird, but maybe, you know, maybe that does, you know, a lot of people still like Obama and perhaps in Pennsylvania too.
He has done enough to sort of, it's hard to win as a Democrat here. It's hard to win as a Republican. He has done enough. You know, he was the most successful candidate in that election year of the Democrats in the state. Like he won by a bigger margin than, you know, Fetterman and these types. So like he's a decent purple state governor. But, you know, if he stays in, like, I think that he will jump with the Harris administration would be my hunch, you know, because the elections are going to get harder to win here. Fetterman kind of saying all kinds of different things over the past couple months. To me, people might say, oh, well, he's gone off his rocker since the stroke. I think that he's really trying to become kind of the loose cannon figure you might need to win a purple state in, you know, coming years.
And finally, Oliver, can you explain for English listeners the Eagles for Harris story that happened with the posters that she seemed to sort of hijack or seemed to be trying to hijack support of the Philadelphia Eagles, who are a very popular American football team? I wonder how that went down in Pennsylvania, particularly among Pittsburgh Steelers fans who presumably answer.
I honestly thought there had been, like, it didn't initially when that circulated on social media, I thought there had been some kind of actual team, like the NFL wouldn't do this, but I thought there had been some like actual team endorsement for Harris. And certainly, like, I think probably relatives of mine are still catching up to this idea that there haven't. So I would imagine if you are just a low info Pittsburgh Steelers voter and this somehow came across your feed in some way, I don't know if you can make an ad. Like, I have not seen a Trump specific ad mocking this yet or like a, but why not run those in this Western P? I mean, like until you mentioned, I hadn't even thought about that. Why not run ads talking about this whole thing in this particular market and see what happens? Because that alone could hit low info. I mean, it was so strange. Like, it's not an official team. For anyone listening, the Philadelphia Eagles did not endorse Kamala Harris. The campaign gave that suggestion or gave that indication or just, you know, see that implication, I guess you could say. But boy, that would be a great little way to market the right in Western PA. I mean, that if with one thing that is hated, whether it's not Shapiro, it's the Eagles right here. Like Philadelphia might as well be, and Philadelphia is very far away for our listeners. Like it's a 7 hour, 6.5 hour drive from here.
Yeah.
So that's pretty far. I mean, you can get very far in that amount of time in most places. I have been to Philadelphia like 3 times in my life, like once in 2019, last time in 2019, and to the suburbs. you know, once on a trip to see the Liberty Bell and those sorts of things. But we generally don't. I mean, like, so if there is any real animus in the state, the Philadelphia connection's playing up Philadelphia. And there's an intense dislike of Philadelphia, the much richer city, the city that has that, the city that has the actual base and sector. They, like, it's not declining the way Pittsburgh is. It's large. It has the world's largest open, or at least the U.S.'s largest open air heroin market now, I think. I think it surpassed San Francisco. It might have. Don't quote me on that. But it's not a popular thing here. But that is something that if you could tie a candidate to Philly in Pittsburgh, you would certainly make inroads among our low info voters here.
That's fascinating. I hope attack ad specialists are listening. Oliver, finally, I'm going to ask you, I know it's not really fair to do it, but if you have to make a prediction, which way is Pennsylvania going to go in 2024?
I think that it will be a narrow and extremely controversial, probably talked about for many, many news cycles. I'll probably end up writing something about it. Other people, I'm certainly will. Very, very narrow and the way things are going right now, very, very narrow and controversial win for Harris. But I think if you look at the underlying economic data in this region, you look at the underlying like demographic data for this region, you look at sort of the future of this state, that would amaze me, because all of those signs, I think, point toward the brand and the platform that Trump is selling. Whether that would help them or not, it would be different. Just like changing out the city administration here would be different. You have to have competitive elections. You have to change. Like, that might not be for the better or the worse, but you have to change after a certain amount of time and stagnation. So the fundamentals of the election would all point towards strengths for the Republicans. And I think even a candidate with some of the weaknesses that Trump Vance might have should be a contender. So I think this will be like razor thin. I think this whole thing is going to be much closer than everybody thinks. I think like all of these things, like job numbers and everything else, are very skewed by a variety of factors. I don't think that the average, like if you just, you know, again, this is just impressions talking to people, reporting on it. I don't think that the average voter feels economically secure the way they did even 15 years ago. I don't think that that's the case. And so I think that come the like week or two before, you know, people are going to ask themselves, and I think Trump worked it into one of the debates referencing Ronald Reagan, like, are you better off than you were 4 years ago? If you ask that question, that's a Republican win for sure.
Yes.
But I think just, my like, you know, horse racing sense is that close Harris win.
And lastly, and I realize this is the third time I've said lastly, this often happens on my podcast. You mentioned a little bit about mail-in voting at the beginning, and we don't have to get deep into the realms of conspiracy theory here to say that it was extremely important in Pennsylvania. There was a Supreme Court decision, I think, allowing a larger access to mail-in balloting just before the election in 2020. And that won the state for Biden. That's not a conspiracy theorist thing to say, is it?
Well, no. I mean, the mail-in ballots in this state and other states broke for Biden during a period of lockdowns and general confusion about should you be inside the house or outside the house, or it was okay to be outside in protest but not outside in voting. You know, these types of very unclear messaging just in general about, you know, how to behave in a time of COVID. And they broke that way. And I mean, I you know, some states have altered mail-in policies in advance, or tried to alter mail-in policies in advance of this election, but you can still vote by mail-in ballot here. So I'm curious to see how those will break. I would assume once again, and you know, there are arguments to be made in favor of it, right? People don't have access. They can't make it to the polls that day, all sorts of things. And mail-in ballots are designed to help with that. But they could also be easily canvassed, you know, not even in a conspiratorial way. You could just easily canvass them, make sure everybody is mailing them in, lock up blocks, lock down blocks. You know, from that standpoint, you could. It's effective campaigning. So that, I mean, like I said, it could be a narrow and very controversial victory for Kamala Harris. It could be more narrow even than it was in 2020 for Biden.
Oliver Bateman, it's been absolutely fascinating to hear your insights. Thank you very much for coming on to Americano.
Thanks for having me on, Freddie.
That's all for this episode of the Americano podcast. I'd like to thank my brilliant producer, Natasha Farose, and urge you to leave a generous, kind, and warm-hearted review of this podcast on whichever platform you listen to it.